Good morning. On the 11th of September, 2014, this is Brian Madden, and you are listening to a special edition BrianMadden.com podcast sponsored by Raytheon. Got a bunch of folks on the line. We have from our studio in San Francisco, Jack Madden. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Brian.
Who just got back from a mobility conference, and there's a lot going on in the mobility space now, which we'll talk about. We also have from Omaha, Nebraska, Gabe Knuth.
Hello.
And joining us from Raytheon is the VP of Product Strategy Management at Raytheon Cyber Products, Ashok Sankar. So, Ashok, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You know, Ashok, last time we did a podcast with you, it's probably been 2 months, and it was really interesting because you were talking about a product that you were coming out with, which was focused on, it's almost like VDI for mobility, VDI for Android, sort of, where you can run remote Android sessions. And today, you know, today's topic, we want to talk about this sort of a big issue in the world of mobility, which is that whole thing of kind of user experience versus security. You know, we know that those are two sort of mutually exclusive things or perceived as that, and especially with the world of mobility, everyone expects their phones and devices are super easy to use. So I'm really excited to talk about that, but I feel like we should just recap real quick the last conversation we had, because the VMI, like virtual mobile infrastructure,
yeah,
instead of VDI, virtual desktop. That's cool. But I just wonder, like, how's that going? You know, what's a quick recap of that, you know, 20 seconds, and how's that been going for you guys in the past couple months?
Sure. That's a great way to get this thing started. We call it VMI, virtual mobile infrastructure, and, you know, try to differentiate that from VDI, because VDI is about desktop Windows apps being, you know, virtualized and then securely redisplayed. In the case of VMI, it is about virtualizing the native mobile apps, essentially apps written for iOS or Android or something of that nature, and then redisplaying it, essentially optimized for the mobile device, right? So that's what VMI is about. We virtualize those apps in the back end and then securely redisplay that onto the device, thus solving the problem of data at rest on the device. You know, so if your device is stolen or lost, or if there's some any kind of malware that's trying to leak data, there's really no data on the device, you know, to go touch or get lost. You know, it's essentially secure in the back end. Actually, since we last spoke, Brian, it's been going really well. We've got some great interest. We thought originally when we came up with the solution, it might be the government folks who might only be interested, but we're starting to see a lot of interest, if you will, in the commercial space as well. I'd say law enforcement, state governments, of course, healthcare, you know, or places, and even some online, you know, retailers are starting to show some interest in this stuff for delivering sensitive and confidential applications and data for access on mobile devices.
And so I would definitely encourage anyone who's sort of intrigued on this VMI concept to listen to the last podcast we did. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. We talked for an hour about virtual mobile infrastructure, but it's a cool thing. And I definitely went into that thinking, like you said, this is something only for sort of government spooks that they would care about, and it. After we walked away, I was sort of thinking, like, wow, I wish we had that at TechTarget.
Yeah, exactly.
And we went and talked to one of our prospects. I mean, just to interject in that area, we were talking to them about mobility and what their initiatives were. And, you know, I'm a product manager at heart, so I asked the first question. I said, what problem are you trying to solve? What are you trying to do? And they pretty much repeated word for word about what VMI does. You know, I was just blown away, because I'm thinking to myself, you know, here's a new paradigm that we're bringing to market. We have to educate them, et cetera, et cetera. I said, the presentation is over, because you just told us what we do.
Oh, that's amazing. Right. I want actual native mobile devices, not Windows apps, or actual native mobile apps on my devices. I want them to be secure. I want to be able to, you know, not worry about the device. And all, I mean, yeah, you're right.
That's right.
I mean, it's VDI, but you have actual normal mobile devices. Done.
Yeah. I mean, what they're trying to do is, at the end of the day, it's still corporate data. Just because it's a mobile device, mobile app, whatever it is, it's not accessing some different data. It's still corporate data, sensitive information. It's all in the same data store, whether it's your Windows app, your cloud app, they're all going back to that same information. And they want to make sure that's secure.
Well, what a fantastic segue, because at the end of the day, it's all about corporate data. And, you know, in 20 plus years of IT, you know, we talk about the core purpose of IT is providing access to, you know, applications and data and information to their to their users. But a big part of that in IT is, you know, we should modify that by saying providing secure access to apps and data. And so, you know, most IT departments are as focused on security, if not more so, than they are focused on the actual delivery of the applications and data. And so for 20 years, IT departments focusing on securing their data and securing their apps, that's been fine. But then when the whole mobility thing came into, you know, the focus within the past, you know, say 7-8 years, that's been completely opposite. It's all about ease of use. It's so easy to use. It's on, like, I have all my corporate data in my phone. My phone's always with me. Now we're getting to, it's going to be on my wrist. I mean, I've got everything, you know, as easy as I need it.
My corporate data is on my wrist that anybody with a pair of binoculars in a restaurant can go ahead and read it.
Yeah. And so it's funny because we've often talked about how, the whole industry talks about how, like, ease of use and security are sort of like, it's like a teeter-totter, you know, like you increase one, you decrease the other. And so it's an interesting sort of challenge that the definition of mobility is almost easy access to my apps and data. The definition of security is, well, proverbially been making it difficult to access my apps and data. And that's the interesting crash course we're on right now.
That's interesting because, unfortunately, security folks are always looked at as the downtime guys. You know what? They want to do the patches. They want to vet everything. They want to make sure everything is secure. You know, that's really not their purpose. But, you know, for some odd reason, you know, because of the work that they do, they're always looked at as the guys who do the downtime or involved in, you know, creating downtime. But with mobility, what's happened, what we find is that the only reason or one of the prime reasons why these devices are so popular is because of the user experience, right? Even before the iPhones and Androids, there were other mobile devices.
A fact iPads, that we forget sometimes.
Yeah, bomb trios and things like that. Yeah.
Mobility started before 2007.
Yes. But, you know, there was a big, that was an inflection point. I mean, it kind of was a hockey stick type adoption right after that. And what happened was, even with the compact iPads, Palm Trios, people, and BlackBerries, of course, you know, people could use them, but they were corporate controlled, right? They kind of told us what apps we can have, what we can use, and how information is going to flow to these devices. But in the case of these iPhones and, you know, Android devices, you know, these employees are bringing their own devices, and that's why the BYOD phenomenon is there. And what we have found, and what, you know, everyone knows by now, is the user experience that's driving these devices. And what we're finding from people is that the more security components or extraneous components you put on the device in the name of securing data there, right, that starts to diminish or dilute or work against the user experience. And so what people are doing is they're circumventing, you know, these measures that are being put on there, right, and going back somehow to get to the data, which essentially is compromising the work of security in the first place.
And that's the sort of the age-old example. Like, we talk about this, we've been talking about this for years, where, for example, you know, your company gives you, you know, all your corporate data is on a file share, and then there's a VPN, and you have to sort of log into the VPN and then jump through all these hoops and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And maybe that's okay from a laptop because you're sort of connecting it and you're, like, always on and all that kind of stuff. But then from your mobile device and where there's no, you can't really access file shares. And then, you know, after sort of monkeying around with that for a few days, you kind of, you know, the users on their own are just like, yeah, I'm just going to install Dropbox on my laptop. And it's funny because even if it's a home laptop that the IT doesn't control, hey, if you can get through the VPN, you can get to your files. You grab the files, pop them in Dropbox, and then all your corporate files are now very easy to access, comma, in a completely insecure way because they're now, you know, on the mobile devices completely outside the control of the corporation.
Well,
absolutely.
So this reminds me of, and you know, this is something that I think has been a part of the consumerization show in a while. It's so in terms of the security versus ease of use. You know, we talk about like your options that you give to your users have to pass the straight face test today, and I think we're getting to the point where today if your only option for file access is that crazy old slow VPN and pulling out the whole laptop and booting it up. Does that still cross the straight face test as being, you know, somewhat close to the experience that a user can get from, of course, Dropbox? And I think today we have to say not anymore.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, right now it's all about instant gratification. It's got to be there right away, right? I mean, I'll give you one example. I was traveling, you know, to an office, you know, in Dallas the other day, and there was this gentleman who was sitting right next to me. He had an iPad. I had my laptop. I opened it up. I was sitting there for like 5-10 minutes, you know, waiting for everything to go through before I could log in. And he was looking at something on the iPad, and I said, how do you like it? You know, what do you think? He goes, it's too slow. And the thing was, his device was, he was working on it like in less than 15 seconds after coming up, and he still could not tolerate that latency, so to speak, right? So I think we've moved on, if you will, from the fact of, you know, we need to wait for certain things to happen before we can get our work done.
Some people are just never happy, though.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, you know, so the traditional approach of like sort of the security industry towards mobile devices has been to treat them in the same way that they treat laptops, essentially. So where, you know, lock it down, encrypt it, that kind of stuff. And we know that, I mean, Jack, you've been writing about for years, like, you know, the different device management technology that says, oh, well, you know, there's technology out there that you can fully encrypt your phones and you can make it so that users have to domain log in and have it auto lock the screen. But now, you know, the problem is a domain logon password is a complex password, which means you have to pop up to unlock your phone, the full QWERTY keyboard, and then use shift and hit shift, then special character, then question mark, you know, all these kinds of things. And it's like, you know, you just want to pop in your phone real quick to check something on your schedule, and you got to spend, you know, tap, like going through your full domain password just to unlock your phone to check it for 2 seconds, and then you put it back in your pocket, and then 30 seconds later, you got to do it again, and you got to do it again. And yeah. So that just... Which is funny because people, the security professionals say, well, that's great. That device is now secure. And let the user put Dropbox on there because it's still secure. But the user's just going to bring their own phone and have it in their other pocket and put Dropbox on their own phone. And they can still hook Dropbox on the back end into their corporate environment. And then they're just going to sort of break out of, you know, like users, it's like water finding a hole, like water finding a leak. Like users will... Like, maybe that's – that should be a good article. Or maybe you did this already, Jack. But, like, users will make their environment easy to use, period. And it's either going to be – if you don't provide it that's easy to use, then they're just going to do their own phone, and they're going to plug in their own corporate stuff, and they're going to plug in their own Gmail and their own Dropbox and forward all the mails that they need to that environment. And it will be easy to use, whether you make it easy to use for them or not.
Well, we've been saying that for years. Remember consumerizeit.com?
Oh, man. we were talking about that the other day.
We called it FUIT, and we just said users are going to find a way to circumvent IT, and they're not necessarily going to do it to cause a problem. They're not doing it with a malicious intent. They're just doing it because they know how to do it now, and they're just trying to make their jobs and their everyday life easier.
That's true.
I think that's exactly the point, is that they're not necessarily trying to – make life difficult for security, or, you know, they want to cause problems. They just want to make it easier for them to be more productive. And, you know, and they deviate from this baseline. And now that you have these devices that are just coming out, you know, every month now, there's a new device. And then, you know, these operating system changes and things like that. I mean, it's just a nightmare, you know, for these IT security guys to get a handle on.
Well, so okay, so let's for a minute, I'm thinking use cases, because like the use cases that we're talking right now, we're talking about basically two of them. We're talking about email, and we're talking about file syncing. And then there's like a third use case that I want to talk about. And I think that all three of them are unique, because, you know, number one, this email thing is that like all of these consumer phones that everybody buys, for years they've been able to natively hook into corporate email. You know, the iPhone and Android have had Exchange Active Sync support for quite a long time now. So that sort of represents that's one big big possible security problem there. But we sort of have the route. We have like a couple different routes and options. You know, we have MDM, or we can offer alternate email clients and stuff. But then there's that. That's one degree. Then that second use case that I'm thinking of, this file syncing thing, and that's that. Hey, this phone, I'm holding my iPhone in my hand, and you know, I'm looking for the a place where I can map a drive on here, because I want to get to my T drive, and I thought I heard somebody laughing in there, but guess what?
I just laugh because users don't know what map a drive is. I know what you're saying.
Okay,
know that that's a thing.
I want to say that. Okay,
and
I'll say
there's no UI exposed for them to do that. I mean, there's no capability for them to do that.
Yeah, there's no T drive on here.
Yeah.
But when I go into the App Store, there are a million of consumer alternatives. So in that case, it's very clearly defined that, okay, if IT doesn't provide any way to access files on their own, then, and the user wants to get files on their phone, like there's no, if we don't provide a way for them to do it in a good officially sanctioned way, then they have to FUIT. But now we have, you know, we have these various all sorts of products that are calling themselves the Dropbox for the enterprise, including Dropbox for business.
including
specifically
Dropbox
for enterprise.
but then I'm thinking about that third use case of, okay, there's my files, there's my email. But what about all the stuff that we all have to use for years and years that, so those are two apps there, like emails, file syncing, maybe if you want to add in basic productivity and stuff. But then there are the, 937 million other applications that, each company has, thousands of them that, hey, there's no App Store Apple alternative for a good example.
They're legacy applications,
yeah.
Custom built applications. I mean, you know, a lot of companies, if you will, if you look at it, yes, we talk about these productivity apps, which are document management and email and contact management. I mean, that's just like, you know, a small portion of it. People have built apps, I mean, applications over time based around their intellectual property, right? If you go to a pharmaceutical company, for example, their research process, for example, that's pretty much all laden with IP, right? And there is no commercial off-the-shelf app that you can buy, and you have, you know, sensitive data sitting all over that process, that workflow.
And I'm thinking, sorry to jump in there. I'm thinking, like, in terms of security versus usability, they're like, the user just doesn't have any choice because they can't go and get the more easier option from the App Store.
That's correct. I mean, one clear case here is case management, right? People buy, these packaged applications, I mean, Salesforce, whatever they might be, Siebel applications, whatever they might be, but then they customize it for their specific use. You know, it's purpose-built, whatever the case management application might be. And there is, a set of inputs that are necessary. And with these mobile devices, you can essentially have a richer experience if you essentially build against that OS and make use of those sensors. So legacy apps that you might have built, which might be necessarily geared towards keyboard and mouse optimized environments, are not the greatest use cases here. We know of a couple of areas where people have piloted these applications, you know, where they've taken these Windows apps, they've tried to optimize it for these mobile devices, and the users just gave them back in a couple of days and said, nah, it's not working for me, right? Now, they pretty much realize, well, we've got to put in the investment and go in and build these native mobile apps if I'm going to take control of these different sensors and, you know, start to use them, if you will. So I think that's one of those things we need to start looking at.
Well, that's the voice of Ashok Sankar, VP Product Strategy and Management at Raytheon Cyber Products. Sorry for interrupting you, Jack. I was interrupting Jack Madden, our mobility expert in our studio in San Francisco. Gabe Knuth is also on the line from Omaha. And this is Brian Madden. You're listening to it. BrianMadden.com's live podcast sponsored by Raytheon Cyber Products. So thank you for that, Jack. You were saying.
Okay, so yeah, I was saying that rebuilding and reform factoring and rechanging applications in order to be mobile. Sort of for all three of you guys, I'm curious on what you're seeing on this, because as Ashok just said, one solution for legacy apps is VDI and some sort of other remote desktop, but the user experience isn't that great. But I wrote an article a couple months ago, sort of just summing up all the different technologies we've heard of and come across and seen for basically making it easier to transform older applications into newer style user interfaces. So this is stuff like PowWow and Capriza, and back when FrameHawk did some of the reformatting stuff, all of the various mobile app development platforms that are designed to make it easier to make apps, mobile backend as a service. I could go on and on forever. But I'm curious, the three of you so far, I know it's early days, and what you're seeing as of people actually doing that. Maybe that's our answer.
Oh, okay. I'll take that one. Well, one of the things that we're seeing from a VMI perspective, it is very nascent, at least in the mobile world. Like you said earlier, what you're seeing are people, they've been experimenting with MDM. You know, it's basically a management solution, device management solution. It does a few things. But it's not necessarily a serious security solution by any means. Then you've got the secure container piece, which is about, data sitting on the device, right? But still can be compromised because a lot of that is the application layer. And I think VMI is becoming, I wouldn't say necessarily prevalent, but when people are starting to look at it from a data perspective, and say, hey, I've got, at the end of the day, it's about data, and I still need to extend that user experience, a secure user experience, if you will, a VMI becomes a very very viable alternative, right? Because VDI gets there, but doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily optimized like the VMI is for mobile devices.
So basically it's like if you're in the situation where you decide, okay, secure redisplay for what we're dealing with, we want to do secure remote display instead of having any data on the device. And when it's a mobile device, then it makes sense that the data on the applications that you're securely redisplaying, that you're displaying a mobile application for that user instead of a desktop application.
Yeah, I don't think you make a decision. I mean, if I can look at it a little differently there, make a decision, secure redisplay is what I'm going for. I think what you're looking to see is that I've got data and I can't afford to lose it. I can't afford to leak it. And, here's a bunch of folks who are coming up with all these devices, and I understand it makes them more productive, they're happy, et cetera, et cetera. I need to go support them. But how do I make sure that my data is not lost, in those circumstances? I think is the question you're trying to answer. And when you try to look at that, you know, the answer then would be, why would I put the data in a place where it's going to be risky if I can help it at all, right? And a lot of sensitive, confidential, classified data fall in that category. And so, you know, from a corporate perspective. And so, I think Redisplay then becomes a viable option.
Well, and frankly, like, that to me even is sort of a traditional security approach because, you know, there are ways to manage data on devices, whether it's a mobile device or a desktop, in a secure way. You know, you can ensure the device is encrypted. You can have remote wipe. You know, you can do those kinds of things. So, yeah, the fact that with a secure Redisplay, I like that term, which I would apply to, you know, VDI or VMI or any remoting sort of environment. Yeah, with secure Redisplay, you sort of get the security kind of like, quote unquote, for free with a solution like that because it's not living on the device. But to me, the real value of it is, you know, even if I decide that I want to either find a mobile app that does what I need for my corporate app, or I want to develop that app, or I want to, you know, build it or whatever. I mean, I've got so many different flavors of mobile devices out there, you know, because I've got different iOS devices, and now we're going to be adding in like two more screen sizes. So I got like eight different screen sizes of iOS. I have a million screen sizes of Android. I got two Kindle Fires. I've got who knows how many Blackberries. Blackberries, like square Blackberries now, like all these things. And there's Windows. There's all these mobile devices out there, and just the headache I would have to go through to develop my, you know, app to run natively on all these different platforms and all these different form factors and all these different devices. I mean, you'd spend all your time. It's a full-time job for like a whole team.
That's a great point. If I can just interject really quickly, because that's one of the hidden values that you talked about earlier, where in our case, we just developed the app once and we can support it across the iOS and Android platforms and also the various form factors and things of that nature. So, you know, when you decide that you want to move towards a mobile development platform, you choose whatever it is, and then you're trying to develop this native mobile app, you don't necessarily have to consider or worry about these tens of different types of permutations that you've got out there. And if I can quickly add one other hidden value there, what we have found, you know, we're kind of benchmarking this at this point, is that let's say you had a 15 meg file, and you were sitting in an airport and you're trying to access that. You know how there is a little circle that goes around, you know, waiting for that thing to download, that wheel, if you will?
Yeah.
You know, in our case, because it's just secure Redisplay bits, it comes down much faster, right? And one of our prospects told us about it. We were not even looking for it.
Yeah, that's a,
it's almost like when you instead of who knows, like how chatty a certain app is going to be with a network and how well a particular app is going to deal with different network conditions. It's almost your requirements, once you decide to go this route, your requirements for connectivity are always 100% fixed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the exact same benefit that we were talking about with WinFrame in 1996.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, in those
and,
days.
And OnLive was talking about in 2012.
I can take a bunch of your old stuff and do a find and replace for VDI, for VMI. And
dude, you could take a vacation for a year and no one would know about it.
Oh, man.
And you can be an algorithm. So let's invent a new Madden. Like we have Paul Madden, and he
writes about VMI. Yeah, he publishes three articles a week.
Yeah, he's a PowerShell commandlet. So, but here's the thing, because people talk about VDI or desktop remoting as like, oh, is it good? No, the user experience is not bad. But what's funny, no one talked about whether desktop remoting was bad or good experience before 2007. You know, in 2007, the iPhone came out, and then people started trying to remote their desktops to the iPhone, and they're like, oh, this experience is horrible. But the reality is that no one was saying the experience was bad from 1997 to 2007 because every single person who was trying to connect to a remote desktop environment was doing so from a device with a keyboard, a mouse, and a big screen. And the point is that the benefit that Windows remoting had, it's still today, but the benefit, the reason why no one was complaining about it for that first decade was because, it gave us the benefits, like Ashok was talking about, where it gave us the benefit of I can have any of my corporate apps with the full corporate environment and the full corporate context on any client device. And I don't care what version of Windows they're running. I don't care if it's a Mac or Linux or Windows. I don't care about, you know, if they're in the domain or not in the domain, if they're in the office or out of the office, if it's telephone line or for the fast network. I don't care about any of that stuff. It just works. And, and it wasn't until mobile devices with no keyboards came out and tiny screens that we all started arguing about whether, you know, Windows remoting was a good solution or not. And I think that sort of clouds the issue that Windows remoting, or I should say desktop remoting to devices with keyboards, mice, and big screens is a great experience. And so that's what this kind of brings back in the mobile space is that, you know, when people are talking about remoting, you know, secure redisplay to mobile devices, they often think of that in the context of remoting your Windows desktop apps that are meant for the big screen, keyboard, and mouse. And if we think about this, like these benefits, in addition to these security benefits that we were mentioning, just the mere fact, like I was saying, that you can make a mobile app designed for touch, designed for ease of use, designed for quick access, work on any platform. There's a lot of real benefit there, and we don't have to have the conversation. Like, no one's going to try to remote a mobile app to a desktop. Well, yeah. I hope people are going to try that, but that's not the point. And this is the same thing. Like, we can put this argument to – not the argument – not with us. I'm saying, like, the industry needs to put this argument to bed saying secure redisplay is good, proven technology. It makes sense. Where it doesn't make sense is where you have that sort of form factor transfer. You're trying to, you know, deliver to secure redisplay an app for one form factor on a different form factor. But if you're keeping within the same form factor, it makes sense.
So that's the same thing you were saying earlier, is that just like you're hoping that nobody will – remote a mobile app onto a desktop, it really doesn't make much sense to remote a Windows desktop optimized for something else. Maybe in some cases it is, I don't know, onto a mobile device because, you know, you're not necessarily using or utilizing, taking advantage of the richness of that device, right? And in a nutshell, you know, you've got the user experience that is preferred with VMI, with virtual mobile infrastructure. You've got the security aspect of it covered because the data is not on the device and it's secured in the back end somewhere, right? And it takes full advantage of all the sensors and all the elements that this device, the device has to offer.
Oh, you mean like in terms of accelerometer and geopositioning and like multi-touch and all that kind of stuff, right? Yeah.
Right. Essentially, it's kind of built – it's just a mobile app. It's not running on the device. It's running in the back-end server somewhere. That's all it is. And it can support multiple users in that case. And there's one other important thing from a security perspective. Realize with a personal device, I can just go to any app store and start to download anything that I want, right? And I could have infected apps that are coming down and then, you know, compromise the device and I would not know about it, which is still an IT security nightmare. But in this case, when the apps are coming down, it is under IT control. They have to publish that to the VMI for the end user to have access. They can't just download it directly onto their device.
And so, if they did download something directly on the device, that's running locally on the device outside the context of the corporate environment. So
absolutely,
you run all the... Here's the proverbial Angry Birds reference that Jack hates.
Oh, I was going to say that, so I'll just refrain from that.
Oh, yeah, Jack has a, like, don't get Jack started. There's not enough time left.
All right, Candy Crush.
No. But you have to figure, like, not the Candy Crush that you get from the iTunes store. You figure the Candy Crush that you, disable the trusted sources only button on your Android phone, and you get this from some website that is not the Google Play Store.
Right.
Yeah.
So
pretty much.
So I'm wondering if you can go over again, because we're talking about the appropriateness of of it makes sense to remote mobile apps to mobile devices the way it makes sense to remote Windows apps to devices with desktops and keyboards. So I know we covered this the last conversation, but what's there like in Raytheon's product right now? Like, which sensors are supported today?
Well, we support pretty much all the sensors that are out there, the touch screen, et cetera. The camera is something that we are working on at this point in time. And, with the release that's coming up, which is a version 2.0 release, the release after that, we will have made some strides in that base. I think, and then, with that comes the secure VoIP capability as well. We want to be able to provide the ability to securely make phone calls. And then, do the unified communication piece. So, taking advantage of the sensors that are already available on the device.
Oh, man. And the unified communication piece is something, I think in terms of user experience and security, I wrote this about, another vendor earlier this week. I wrote an article about, their unified communication efforts. And this is something that I think Brian and Gabe and I always also do on our own with our own like Google Voice version, a hacked version of unified communications, because like my business card only has one phone number on it. There's no, should I call Jack at his desk or should I call Jack at his cell phone? Am I calling his cell phone at a weird time or is he even at his desk right now? No, there's just one number. It goes to my Google Voice number. I forward it to my cell phone. And hey, if I don't want to be getting work calls, I'll hit the button in the app to send it straight to voicemail for the weekend. And, that's something that I've been using, for as long as I actually longer than I've, well, basically as long as I've been in the corporate world, and it just makes so much sense. So I want any mobility solution that I use, especially for BYOD, but to include some sort of unified communications component. So I am super excited to hear that that'll be in a future version.
Yeah, absolutely. As we move through, we're trying to support some of these additional capabilities, and as we discover more and more use cases in these areas, case management obviously is a very, very big application for us. When we go into, for example, law enforcement, we start to find areas where some of these capabilities, when they are together, are very, very beneficial, which today in the laptop world and the Windows world, they are still disparate. They are still not integrated. So, this mobile environment, makes collaboration a lot more easier than it was, 5, 6, 7 years ago. In the laptop world. So as we move forward, these are some of the things that we will continue to discover and support.
And I imagine that, so you look at the Apple Watch, and I know Android, there's different Android devices that have watches.
Is there going to be a client for that?
Well, no. Yes, of course, there has to be. I mean, but the thing is, it works the same way. So there's imagine the sort of secure redisplay client. Like, there's a couple ways it could work. It could actually be, remoting the interface on the watch itself. So an app is running in a back-end VMI that it has partnership with a wrist device or secondary device. Can kind of send both screens down, or you can imagine where there could be a generic client that could just display like data fields and that kind of thing. And then, that could just expose them out that way. So
there were already jokes on Twitter.
I mean,
about who will come out with remote clients for,
here's the thing that's weird about this. This isn't a joke. I mean, it's just the next, because they're probably, I guarantee if you look at Twitter, well, Twitter wasn't as popular in 2007, but people were like, with this iPhone, someone's like, oh, who's going to be that? When's the Citrus client going to come for iPhone? Ha, ha, ha. And now, like, 7 years later, we're all, yeah, but like now all, but the point is now that's not a joke. That's a serious thing. And, if it gets to the point where a wearable device, it doesn't even matter if it's an Apple Watch or an Android Watch or whatever, Pebble Watch. It's just you expect that your watch does more than just tell time. Then all these, secure redisplay technologies will do that. And the powwows of the world and all them, when you're form factoring your applications, you're going to be able to decide which data bit you want to display on the secondary device, which one's on the primary device. But again, this is one thing that's nice is now as an application owner, you know, you don't have to build 47, like we already have, you know, a million different combinations of permutations of OS and device and form factor and features and everything. And this is just another sort of like sensor that's added into your mobile environment and just another screen that you can target for your data.
But man, as Brian, just now as you were saying that, I was going through my head thinking about like secure redisplay for a watch or for like a Google Glass or something. And I'm thinking like, oh, you'd have to be getting into more, like I found myself having the argument in my head, like thinking to myself, why remote things on a watch would be difficult. And I found myself having the same argument in my head between like going from secure display on a phone or a tablet to secure display on an even smaller peripheral device that people probably had, going from secure display on a desktop down to on a phone.
Yeah,
yeah, and I guess
I don't know, like, man, are,
it's
like,
not
are we gonna
stop
have
people
to be
from trying? That's the thing. It's not going to stop anybody from trying to do it.
Yeah, well, I think the litmus test there is going to be, you know, is there going to be any sensitive information that I can't afford to lose that's going to be on that device? Then there's a market for it. Then the people will see that as a viable option.
Well, so one thing also, like, the thing that's important to think about, too, is that this doesn't have to be an all or nothing proposition. Like, while we talk that there are benefits in doing secure redisplay of a complete environment, because then you don't have to worry about integrating local with the remote. Everything just all works together like it should, and that's great. But also there are other times when, hey, it makes sense to have, you know, some of our stuff is local native apps and some of our stuff is, you know, maybe just single published apps or something like that. So you may also have
hybrid apps. When I say hybrid apps, you know, things that may have to work in the offline sense and also online sense based on situations or environments you're in, right?
Yeah. So I think, I guess when approaching any of these situations, we just have to have a very very careful and considered conversations about, you know, what's hybrid, what's remote, and what's local, and to make the user experience the best. Wow, look at me bringing it all the way around like that.
real quick interruption. So that's Jack Madden, our mobility expert in San Francisco. We've got Gabe Knuth on the podcast from Omaha. The other voice is Ashok Sankar, who's a VP of Product Strategy and Management at Raytheon Cyber Products. And Raytheon Cyber Products is the sponsor of today's podcast, and also from San Francisco. This is Brian Madden. Jack, you were talking about, though, the complexity of, okay, all these screens, and where do I redisplay? Where do I native? Where do I where do I UI transform? But again, this is just sort of it makes your head spin, but this is the world we live in now. Like we've always talked about, you can't uninvent the iPad. You can't uninvent the iPhone. Those exist now. And the same is going to be true for you know, call these secondary devices, wearable devices, whatever that's going to be. Those exist now. And we're going to have to figure out through some, it'll probably be a Frankenstein-ish monster type implementation at first, but we're going to have to figure out through these things how to make all that work.
Yeah.
And we'll do it. We'll get it done.
Yeah, I'm thinking about stuff like you're on your local desktop and you have a published application and passing through authentication from your local desktop to that remote app, and like those are things that I guess we're going to have to figure out for virtual mobile infrastructure too.
Yeah, I mean, right now with virtual mobile infrastructures, you know, we connect with any corporate identity and access management platforms that you may already have there. and then you can turn it up to the levels you want them to. So those pieces exist. In some cases where people have physical access cards, they're trying to figure out, you know, how best to get the credentials on the device so they don't have to have some kind of a sled or some kind of a tethered component in order to, you know, read those cards and things like that. So as these pieces evolve, you know, I think the VMI piece will be pretty easy to support them because it's not necessarily inherent to it. It is a separate component as it has been in the corporate environment so far.
Do you think, and maybe this is also a question for Brian and Gabe. Do you think, so as we're beginning to talk about this conversation about virtual mobile infrastructure, obviously you guys saw firsthand all the mistakes made and things that we learned, with remote desktops over the years. Do you see that as we're starting to talk about virtual mobile infrastructure, are the lessons learned from VDI, are they successfully being applied there? And I guess if not, then it's our job and your job as desktop virtualization bloggers to sort of say, like, hey, we like had these same issues in that we figured out years ago. So as we're going down the road again, just different OSs and different form factors, here's how these lessons get applied.
I think that when desktop virtualization started, we were using the best tools that we had available to us. And the problem that we had, where the issue started to come up, where we had to start learning lessons, was as we tried to take those older technologies and apply them to newer use cases. And that's where the learning curve started. And I think this time around, again, we're using what's at our disposal today, but what might be there 5 years from now is probably better than what's there today. So the lesson I think that we need to be mindful of is to just keep on trying to use that later technology rather than trying to leverage the old stuff for longer than maybe we should.
Well, and you just described why you need VMI and not VDI.
Because, correct,
again, I cannot emphasize enough that the problem with VDI on a mobile device has nothing to do with VDI. It's the problem of
form factors.
It's running desktop app. And the thing is, Windows sucks on a tablet with or without VDI. And, you know, which is exactly why Windows 7 and Windows 8 tablets are not super popular. And, you know, they're only really good if you actually run the new style, you know, Windows 8 apps that are meant for touch, which have all these restrictions around them. And there's only, you know, 1/1000th as many apps that are written for touch as that are written for desktop.
And which exactly is the reason why, you know, if they're not optimized for touch and the sensors on the device, right, you're not going to get that right experience.
Well, and the exact same reason. And the exact same reason why, if you start with an app that's a mobile app that's meant for that screen, meant for touch, it's instrumented to use the right sensors, and then you're just remoting that application to your mobile device instead of remoting a desktop application, then it's going to be fine.
That was going to be exactly my point, because at the end of the day, we need to remember that we're talking about mobile applications here, and the fact that it's a remote redisplay, that's just Brian said form factor, or the mechanics of how we're delivering that mobile application to the device. Who cares? You still need to, when you're deciding what apps to build and concentrate on and how to deliver them, the fact that it's a remote redisplayed mobile app instead of a local mobile app is fairly inconsequential. You still need to be thinking in the mobile mindset, and you know, thinking what functions do you want to do on a mobile device, and you know, it's way more than the mechanics of the delivery. Because if you just converting a desktop application into a mobile app with all the same buttons and options, even if you make it the most like friendly menus and easy touch-based, easy to navigate interface at all, if what you're doing from a desktop with a mouse and keyboard a lot of times doesn't make sense when you're walking down the street on a small device and taking advantage of location capabilities. So the bottom line is, like, you have to be thinking in a mobile mindset, not just how we're delivering this app.
Yeah, I think it's an important point that you just made, because, I mean, the paradigm itself is completely different. Sure, it's an endpoint, but then, you know, it's very different from what we're used to, and trying to reoptimize the old one just would not work. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it comes back to, you know, you may think you're saving some money here or there, but it comes back to user experience. Right. And here I've got a device that I love to use, but I would not want to use your app. I'm going to try to find a different way to do things, which can complicate things at the back end again.
The thing that people don't forget, because a lot of people are still saying, oh, well, remoting, the experience is going to be bad. I don't want this application to have to depend on the network. Let's hold back for a second. A lot of the apps that are sort of the killer apps on these devices are already remote redisplay apps. Like, that's what the web is, you know? So the web is sending pictures and data that are rendered locally on your screen. What's secure redisplay? It's sending pixels and data that are remote rendered on your screen. What's the difference between them? And no one is running around saying, oh my God, the web browser on my iPad sucks because if I don't have an internet connection, it doesn't work. Yeah, no shit. But when is that, you know? And so there's nothing fundamentally wrong with remote redisplay, because we do that. I mean, you know, 90% of my life right now on my desktop too is living in a remote redisplay environment.
So the because you're saying, like, the amount of stuff that we legitimately expect to be able to do without an internet connection is reading and writing, and everything else that we do, like, hey, we have to have an internet connection no matter what. And if the remote protocol is more, you know, a remote protocol can be a lot more, you know, okay with, you know, because first of all, like we said, it's predictable. And if there are, you know, drop packets and interruption or anything, it's not like we have to, it's not like it's part of a file that we have to go back and stop and pause and go back and make sure that you downloaded it. It's just like a blip in the display for a second.
Oh, well, I mean, from my perspective, I agree with that.
Yeah, Brian, I remember having this conversation with you before. You know, client server applications that the client is downloading specific bits of data, or the future of those compared to the future of remote redisplay applications in general. Because again, like I was just saying, like the remote redisplay app, you know, all the important compute stuff, it's still going on in the back end. And if you're something's happening for a second, that's in a lot of cases, that interruption, if it's just a remote display app, is probably more tolerable.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we need to keep in mind these technologies, like remote redisplay versus like app transformation, these are not mutually exclusive. So you can go ahead and use your app transformation product to take your existing desktop application and transform it into a form factor that works on a small screen with touch and, you know, has all the right buttons in the right places where you want and everything, but then still use secure redisplay to be the wrapper, A, to make it work on any device, any platform, which maybe the app transformation people have, but B, more importantly, to wrap like all the security and all that kind of stuff around it. So now, you know, if you want, like, step one is app transformation, making the Windows app look nice on a mobile device. But step two is the actual securing of that. And, you know, remember with VMI, you get sort of also for free along with that the ability to use whatever authentication you want, whatever timeouts you want, have it synchronized with your other corporate app. So you can have, because the problem is people say, well, some of these app redisplay products do that, but then you're managing the app redisplay or the app transformation apps differently your native apps, and there's different logins, different apps on the phone, and all that kind of stuff. And now, if you deliver them all, the ones you've transformed and the ones that are native via VMI, you've got one environment, one set of credentials, one set of rules. You can put it into whatever crazy back-end authentication systems you need. You can do, like, you know, screen recording and auditing of all activities because they're all running back in your data center. You just get all that for free because your architecture went to VMI.
Yeah, so there is more. There is more you get with that, Brian. I mean, the sense that we talk about just authentication, but there is this thing around granular policy controls. Because of the way the VMI is architected, and because of the gateway component that we have, you know, I can control to the most granular level. Meaning, when I say we can provide the capability for the enterprise IT folks to say this person can have access to this application at, you know, during this time of day, or when they are in this location only, you know, and things of that nature, or if they are connected to certain types of, you know, devices, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the list is endless. What I mean by that is that, you know, based on the enterprise's need or requirement to control access to this information or these apps, we can essentially allow them to manipulate in any way they want.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah, the combination of those two things together, well, it helps get people over the hump too. Like, you know, okay, this is great, but I don't have a mobile app to deliver. But if we can take a Windows app, wrap it, or not wrap it, but refactor it, yeah, and then deliver it with a solution like VMI, I like that a lot. I mean, it's
so one of the things
it can be complicated, but it's not nearly as complicated as it sounds complicated, but it's not nearly as complicated as writing your entire solution as a mobile app from scratch.
Yeah, so what's important is having that mobile app so it can take advantage of the mobile device and then the components that it brings with it, right? And not necessarily just try to make it look like it can just use one or two things. Then you're back to that thing of taking a Windows app, you know, that was traditionally built for a laptop desktop environment, and now you're trying to re-optimize it for the mobile device.
Man, this is great. So, see, we're coming up on the end of the hour here, but just especially this conversation about, you know, remote redisplay apps versus client server apps, and so many good ideas floating around here. And I know Brian, Gabe, and I are going to have a lot of different ideas about this to talk about for weeks.
I literally wrote down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ideas for articles based on this podcast. But I'm on board with this big time. You know, I'm a fan of Windows desktop remoting since I've essentially dedicated my career towards this since 1997. And, you know, I was not a fan of Windows apps on tablets, but that doesn't mean I was not a fan of the concept of remoting apps on tablets. I just didn't like remoting Windows apps to tablets. I didn't like Windows apps on tablets. So I'm on board with this big time. I love this concept.
So when I first, you know, heard about this whole thing, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, now this is going to be a little bit of a difficult approach, because I was kind of used to the VDI environment in a laptop world. I mean, honestly speaking. But sometimes when we go and talk to people and when we show the piece, we repeatedly have to tell them that the app is not running on the device. It's running somewhere in the back end, because they're not necessarily able to see the difference, so to speak. And that kind of speaks to the user experience aspect of it, if you will.
So when does Citrix buy Raytheon?
Or
so
it'd be the other way around.
Or I guess it's when do Citrix and Citrix and VMware and MobileIron
So we do support the Citrix environment. You know, like we come from a cross-domain information world, and I think information assurance world. And I think we talked about it last time, you know, when we were giving you our pedigree, if you will. And, you know, in that environment, we support the VDI environments extensively, you know, at different classification levels, you know, data classification levels. And we see this mobility piece as an extension to support that environment as well. In fact, that's how it started, right? So with our mobile gateway, it's just not the VMI that we can support in the back end. If customers say, hey, I've got a VDI or a VAI type environment I need you to support, you know, we can easily plug that in. As long as, you know, we can get the information through our communication gateway, you know, we're ready to go. So it's not necessarily a competing environment, if you will, but it's more of a complementary environment, because there are instances where people might say, you know, it's not necessarily something I need to put as a mobile app. You know, I'm going to use the VDI environment in order to funnel it through.
Yeah, because I guess that's your whole point, is that you can have then multiple, like, network multiple security classifications, and, you know, you've got secret and top secret and sensitive and everything, and the apps and data you're delivering, it can be mobile, it can be desktop, it doesn't matter.
Right. Access from one endpoint, right? Access anywhere based on IT policies, you know, where I can access what, when, et cetera. And at the same time, be able to access it across classification levels and across app types as well, right? That's what people want. The thing is, I don't want to have three or four different devices for three or four different environments or users. I want to have it on one device, right? And the personal device that I chose or I like using, I'm used to. That's the whole concept behind it.
Our hour is up, and that's a great way to sort of finalize this. Ashok Sankar, any final thoughts on, you know, what people should do, next steps? You know, I can guarantee that we, the three of us, will have lots of articles on this kind of stuff in the next, you know, coming up months. So if you're listening to this podcast and it's, you know, after the middle of September, take a look. But to find out more information about Raytheon Cyber Products and what you're doing on VMI, we'll put the links. Is there an easy URL you can give us? We can put the links in the show notes.
Absolutely. I'm Brian, I'm looking forward to the articles coming out and having, you know, further discussions on this. People can find more information from www.raytheon.com/cyberproducts. You know, we've got a ton of information there, videos, white papers, whatever people want to get. They can also contact us if they want to see a demonstration. We've got free pilot offers going on right now as well. So, you know, anything for people to touch it, feel it, get an idea of how that's going to apply to them, and, you know, how they can derive, you know, the value that they're looking for from their mobile investments.
Well, with that, thank you so much, Ashok Sankar, a VP of Product Strategy Management at Raytheon Cyber Products. Also, thank you to Jack Madden in our studio, Gabe Knuth in Omaha, Justin Meissinger, our engineer, Mariah Lyons, our project manager. And to all of you, thank you for listening. This is Brian Madden, also in San Francisco. Enjoy your day.